Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. I have no idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. And another Grand Prix, of course, happening this weekend. Only four races left of the 2020 season. Mercedes, as we know, have already got the seventh consecutive world title. So they are champions as a team. The only two drivers now that can win the driver's title is the two Mercedes drivers. So it's between Bottas and Hamilton. Let's be honest, it's Hamilton's title. I'll be amazed if anything happens that Bottas wins this now. But the Turkish Grand Prix is this weekend, of course. It's a anti-clockwise circuit, so it'll be hard on all their necks. I think the first race here was it 2005, somewhere around there? And they last raced here 2011. So excited about this. We've got that that really cool left-hander and we turn eight, which is like three left-handers almost in one, isn't it?
Like a 50 pence coin it is. So there's like three or four apexes that they need to try and hit at high speed, which is brilliant. And turn one on this circuit's really good as well. It's a sharp left-hander at the end of the start-finish straight, which dips down as well. So we've seen in the past, we've seen lots of people lock up there. Great overtaking opportunity into turn one at Turkey. The drivers love it. It's probably the only Herman Tilke circuit that is internationally known and respected as being a brilliant driver's circuit. Some of the others that he've designed just haven't really produced interesting races, but this one definitely has, and it should definitely do so again. Records are going to tumble in terms of lap times because the cars are so much faster than they were than the last time we were here. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a really good Grand Prix. I think we're going to have lots of race leader changes and all that sort of stuff because, again, Pirelli haven't got any tyre data at this circuit, and I think it's going to be fairly tough on tyres. So we might see different strategies throughout the race, different strategies during qualifying even, to try and get the top runners starting on the medium tyres and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be a good weekend.
Yeah, and I think what I love about these circuits, like you say, because Formula One hasn't been at this circuit for like 9 years, the cars have evolved so much in that time. So when the cars go back to these circuits, like you say, not only do the times tumble like crazy, but it's just fascinating to see how the cars are different on the circuit. And we've seen some circuits where, you know, 10 years ago, you'd easily have to lift in certain areas of the track, but now they don't have to lift, they just crack on, they just go for it, and they just plow through these same corners. The lap record I've just looked up here is Juan Pablo Montoya in 2005, 1:24.770 is the current lap record. So it'll be interesting to see how much that comes down over this race weekend, but it was a track that I liked, Turkey, so it's good to be back here. Again, we've mentioned this loads of times on the podcast, but it's so nice to just have all these random circuits this year. It's made the, I was talking to my dad about it, and I just said the season's been, you know, one of the best seasons I can remember because there's been so many unknowns and so many different things that have happened, and gravel traps being back and, you know, drivers coming off the circuit and not being able to rejoin the race, and just kept it really alive. And I think start of the year, it was looking like a bit of a disastrous season because of COVID, but it's properly been rescued and it's been a great season.
Yeah, and I'm tinged, as I've mentioned on the podcast before, I'm tinged with a bit of sadness that these tracks, Turkey being a prime example, and Imola last time out, you know, we probably will never race Formula One cars around those circuits ever again. So make the most of these amazing weekends that we're having. Looks like Turkey have been ordered to drop their capacity attendance. They were selling tickets hand over fist for this race. It looks as though now with the COVID restrictions they've been told to limit the crowd or not have one at all, which is a bit of a disappointment for people who were planning to go. And of course the new calendar's been released today for next year's Formula One. It's 22 races, 23 if they replace Vietnam, which shockingly has been dropped from the calendar. Now they say Vietnam's been dropped before it even got started for political reasons, obviously some politics going on over there. It's a real disappointment because they worked so hard to get that track ready. They had a massive amount of infrastructure work done, grandstands built, everything. It was ready to go. COVID came along and stopped it in its tracks. And now we're not going to race there next year unless, you know, there's a massive turnaround with whatever's going on behind the scenes. And I've raced this Vietnam circuit on the old PlayStation. It's a great circuit. Loads of overtaking opportunity. Loads of long straights. It would have been fantastic. So I'm a bit disappointed about that. So 22 races, otherwise 23, if they replace Vietnam. And there are certain rumours that we might be getting a completely new race in time for that calendar slot. We are going to Saudi Arabia next year, which is full of its own controversy. I don't want to get too much into that, but I've some experience of Saudi Arabia, and I just can't see it really working as they think it might. But still, we're starting in Australia next year as well, because that was under threat. They were saying Australia may have been moved to the back end of next season's calendar, but it looks as though we're going to start there in the traditional March opening race.
Yeah, I'm just literally looking at the calendar now, and like you say, you know, potentially if there is 23 races, the last race will be on the 5th of December. So it's, again, it's pushing the season back, you know, so far, isn't it? But yeah, all the favourites are on there. There's a couple of new races on there as well. And it does look like an interesting calendar, but it is very much going back to the calendar of last year, isn't it? With the same countries, the same kind of circuits, the odd new one. You've got Zandvoort and those in there as well. But, you know, back to Monza and Sochi and Singapore and Suzuka and all, you know, Silverstone and all the favourite tracks. So again, hopefully, you know, hopefully next year we'll, you know, the cars will slightly develop. Hopefully, you know, the rule doesn't change until 2022. Now that's been pushed back. So we're not going to see any massive drastic differences next year. It's going to be interesting to see that some of these drivers, you know, people like Ricciardo that's moving to McLaren, he's got kind of a season's grace almost to get himself into that car and, you know, get used to driving it. We've seen how long it's taken him to get his head around the Renault. And I think a lot of drivers changing cars next year. So it'll be interesting to see how they all adapt and how they all get on. You know, how's Vettel going to do at the Aston Martin team, for example? It's going to be a good, exciting season again next year because we've got quite a few changes. Still don't know about the Red Bull team. Still don't know what's happening at AlphaTauri as well. So still many, many unknowns. They like to string these decisions out, don't they, where you think, yeah, come on, you know, you've only... I saw Toto, I think it was, last race, basically saying, you know, we've got a couple of months left of this year, yeah, you know, there's no rush to make these decisions. But us as fans, you know, we're desperate to find out who's going to be in what car, who's going to be driving the Mercedes, you know, is it definitely going to be Hamilton? Is there going to be a huge Hamilton curveball? Is there a huge Toto curveball to come? What's happening with the Red Bull seats? Who's going to end up in the AlphaTauris? Is poor Albon going to even have a drive next year? There's so many questions still to be answered by the end of the season. And as always with these podcasts, we tend to record this podcast and then a day or two later, all the information comes out. And we're like, oh, okay, there we go. There it all is.
Yeah, well, the teams traditionally arrive at the circuits on the Wednesday, don't they? We record this on the Tuesday, and sometimes they make an announcement straight away. So I'm hearing that the Haas team may make a driver lineup announcement at this weekend at Turkey, which could be as early as tomorrow or on Thursday. So, yeah, we kind of missed the boat on that one a little bit. But, you know, Tuesday is a good time to record the podcast because we can normally look back at the weekend just gone and analyse the race. This time, of course, we're looking forward to the Turkish Grand Prix, as we've already done our review show of Imola. Lewis Hamilton still yet to make a decision. Toto Wolff still yet to make a decision. And as you say, you know, they've got time on their hands, I suppose. But if I was the Mercedes team and all of their big sponsors like Patronus, I would want to know what that was going to look like, because I'd want to know that my investment was secure, surely.
Yeah, and call me a cynic, but my gut feeling tells me there's something more going on behind the scenes, particularly at Mercedes, whether that be they can't make a decision, or they haven't made a decision, or they've made a decision internally, but they're not announcing it yet, whether they're getting all their chess pieces in place before their announcement. I don't know, but my gut feeling tells me there's more to this. And I think there's going to be some quite exciting Formula One news towards the end of the season. I don't know anything, but just this is what my gut's telling me. But yeah, you're right. You know, all the sponsors, the teams, the sponsors, everybody wants to know where they're going to be for next year. And this season has been complete reverse. Normally it's the big teams and the big drivers that all confirm their drives for the next year or the next few years, well ahead of time. It's been the other way around this year. You know, we've seen already with Sergio Perez and people like that, you know, he had a contract and that's not been honoured, and Vettel is replacing him at the new Aston Martin team next year. So even contracts, you know, so even when a driver signs a multi-year contract, you think, well, they're safe as houses for the next 3 or 4 years. Not always the case. So I just feel like there's a lot of curveballs still to come this year.
One thing that I was quite pleased about the Alfa Romeo team is they confirmed their driver lineup as remaining unchanged. So we get another year at least of the Iceman, and he can just do no wrong in my eyes. I just think he's a fantastic driver. And as he proved at Imola, you know, he's still got a really good fight left in him when the car can perform. He seems to be able to make the car grip when no one else can.
Yeah, there's been a few times this year I've watched onboard footage with Kimi, and he's done what I would call a very rally-esque manoeuvre where he's caught the car. He's done a bit of sideways action, but his reflexes are incredible. And I actually think he took a few years off to go rallying, didn't he? And I think it's done him the world of good in terms of it's just kept him so sharp. And I do, in a way, you know, I know that they say the best 20 drivers in the world are Formula One drivers. for me, when I watch rally versus Formula One, I think the rally drivers are something special. And sometimes I watch the onboard footage and I think, how on earth can anybody drive a car that quickly in between trees and brick walls? And, you know, there's no tire walls or anything. They drive insanely quickly. And I do believe that the rally drivers are just a different breed and something very special. You know, Formula One drivers are obviously some of the best drivers in the world, but it's easier to do that when you're on a track and you've got tire walls and runoff areas and that kind of stuff. I do think, you know, sometimes the rally drivers, it won't translate into circuit driving. So you'll get somebody who's brilliant at rallies. They'll have a little go in a circuit car. They'll not be that great and vice versa. But Kimi could be rallying great. You know, he never got right up there in the rallying, but he was never that bad. And, you know, he could come back to Formula One. He was just as sharp as he was. And here he is. He's going to be 41, I think, next year, maybe even 42. Yep. And he's just sharp as a razor. Doesn't miss a trick. He's had so many overtakes in the first few laps this year. And he just, like you say, I know it's his nickname, the Iceman, but he seems so cool and chilled and laid back, like he's not got a care in the world. And it's like he just goes out and does a Sunday drive, drives the car and performs that car way beyond what it should be doing. And just incredible. So I'm chuffed he's going to be back next year. Like you say, we've got Alonso back as well. He's another one who's, you know, nearing 40. One of the best drivers ever, I think, in my opinion. Still love Vettel. You know, there's a lot of veteran drivers next year that are in different cars or changing teams. And I think I'm very excited about that, to see what they can all do in their new teams.
Yeah, there's a lot of hate for Alonso. If you look at the Formula One fans forums, a lot of people sort of diss Alonso and say he's washed up. And I just don't see it. I think that this year, the commitment he's put into the Renault program, you know, months before he's going to step into that new car next year, I think is just amazing. And I've mentioned this before, but he's racing again in Dubai in the 24-hour kart race in December, which he's done, I think, for the last 4 or 5 years. Now, he does it, he says, to keep his reflexes active, also because he loves kart racing, because it's the purest form of motorsport. And he does it for a laugh, and he does it to keep his fitness levels up and stuff. I just think his commitment, you know, with him and the package he's obviously signed with Renault, he's going to be paid a lot of money, and he could have just sort of rested on his laurels a little bit and gone, you know what, I've done this before, I've been world champion, I don't need to push the extra mile. But he seems to be, in his preparation for that Renault seat, really pushing and going for every angle he can to try and get an advantage going into the season.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the word I would use looking at him is hungry. I think he's gone away. He's had a few years away from the PR demands and the marketing demands of Formula One. And he's had a few years away from the pressure of being in the media all the time and always being spoken about. And that's done him the world of good. He's got his head together. He's got his head straight. And he's ready. He's hungry. And he's coming back to prove a point. And I think he's coming back to win a world title as well. He's acting like, you know, I've got one last chance, and I'm going to come back and I'm going to smash this. And it would not surprise me that Renault's looking all right at the moment, but it would not surprise me if he wins a world title in that Alpine Formula One team. He's that good. With the Haas team as well, you were talking about this earlier. Who are we thinking Mick Schumacher going to be announced for the Haas team? So I think they've kind of said the three Ferrari drivers that were going to do the driving in the FP1 that didn't get the chance in the end. They said it's kind of between those three, and one of them will be in F1 next year, guaranteed almost. I mean, the big name's obviously got to be Mick Schumacher because of who his dad is.
Yeah, and you've got Ilott, haven't you? And you've got the Japanese driver who are all up for roles, I think. I heard that Mick Schumacher may be kept in Formula 2 for another season because they want to promote him through the Ferrari Driver Academy into a decent seat when it happens for him in Formula 1. And if he can win F2 this year and get that under his belt and then stay in F2, he might be completely ready for a Formula 1 driver at the highest level in 2022. So that could still happen. But I wouldn't surprise me if we saw Mick Schumacher in the team. I mean, think about the publicity he brings. Almost certainly brings some sponsorship money as well, because he carries a lot of the old sponsors his dad had when he was racing in Formula 1. So nothing would surprise me with the Haas team. I think they will definitely go for drivers that have got an affiliation to the Ferrari Academy. And that's probably always going to be the way at that team because of the Ferrari engine and the links that they have together.
Yeah, and questions, I guess, being asked about the Red Bull Academy as well. Because, you know, we've had drivers in the past. Ricciardo is one of them. Carlos Sainz, you know, Vettel. We've had some incredible drivers come through the Red Bull program. And it just seems like they've run out of steam in that sense. It seems like they're now, the heavy talk is Hülkenberg versus Sergio Perez for that spare seat. They reckon one of those two is going to get it possibly to team up with Verstappen, but it very much feels like they've kind of got no other option. You know, Albon has not performed where they wanted him to. Kvyat didn't perform where they wanted him to. Gasly didn't perform where they wanted him to. All of those got demoted very, very quickly. You know, they got a very small window of chance to kind of get in that team. And I think the biggest problem they've got is going up against someone like Verstappen, who's just driving the wheels off that car. They've since built the Red Bull kind of around Verstappen, which makes it even harder for anybody to shine. And I'll be fascinated, to be honest, whether it be Sergio or Hülkenberg or somebody else. I'm going to be fascinated next year to see how close they get to Hülkenberg. You know, and is it a driver thing? Is it a mental thing? If they put a Sergio or a Hülkenberg in there who have been in the game longer and have got their head screwed on, will they cope with it better? Could they sit with Verstappen and be beating him or as close to him as possible? Or are they going to have the same problem where they can't drive the car because it's too Verstappen-led? They can't keep up with him. They can't qualify near him. They can't race near him. You know, is it going to be the same story again for Red Bull next year? They've got some definite questions with their Red Bull driver program.
Yeah, they have. I think they've got a gap where, you know, they've probably still got some young kids in that program who will be coming good in 2 or 3 years' time. But at the moment, they seem to have a bit of a gap in terms of bringing people up to the senior level. What amazed me about Red Bull was the talk that I heard over the Imola weekend was that they were going to decide on the second driver depending on how they would take disappointment. And I thought that was really strange. They were saying, if we put Hülkenberg in the car, we think he'll handle the disappointment of not being able to match Max better than Sergio Perez would. And I'm thinking, well, is that the attitude you want to approach this with? Surely you want your second driver to be giving your number one driver a good run for his money. But they seem to be approaching it by saying, well, you know, Max will always be our number one, which is fine. The second driver will never be at his level, but how well will they handle a disappointment of that? And I'm thinking, surely that's not the attitude. The attitude is, you number two driver, we want you to challenge Max every single corner of every single race.
Yeah, it's a very strange scenario they've got there, isn't it? And I think, you know, you need a driver to throw their toys at the pram. You need a driver to want to be as close to Max as possible. And, you know, we've seen it with Max this year where he'll kick off on the radio and, you know, I'm not doing that. I'm not getting close to this car because that's not helping. I'm not changing my engine mode because I don't like that engine mode. And you've almost got to be a bit like that. Hamilton has a lot of that in him as well. Vettel did as well in the early days particularly. But you've almost got to be a bit of a spoilt brat to get on in Formula One and win these world titles. And Verstappen has definitely got that side to him. Kimi has to an extent as well. Schumacher definitely did have. You know, Alonso has definitely got that side to him as well. And all the people I've mentioned there are pretty much either world champions or future world champions, going to be world champions. For me, though, between Hülkenberg and Sergio, it is literally a flip of a coin because I've got a lot of time for both of those. I think they're both great drivers. I think Hülkenberg has been very unlucky in his career. He's been in the wrong car at the wrong time almost entirely through his career. I think Sergio, again, it far outweighs and outperforms a lot of the cars he's in. If you look at the stats from this year, the kind of best of the rest is Sergio Perez in terms of driver and points. And, you know, if you take all the top teams out of it and all the top drivers out of it, the next best option is Sergio. But is that because Hülkenberg's not been racing this year, so hasn't had a chance to get up there with Sergio? It, for me, it really is a flip of a coin between those two, and I wouldn't want to make that decision. I think I would just slightly lean towards Sergio Perez, were it me, because he's still racing and he's still current.
Right, okay, well, let's get some stats ahead of this Turkish Grand Prix weekend. It's Nikki from At Lights Out. Fascinating tables, formulas and all kinds of information throughout the race weekend on his blog and on his Twitter feed. Follow him, At Lights Out. Here's Nikki with a preview of the Turkish Grand Prix.
As Formula One returns to Istanbul Park for the first time since 2011, Mercedes Power seeks its 200th win and Hamilton is on the hunt for a 7th title. Here are the stats to look out for over the 2020 Turkish Grand Prix weekend. The 2020 Turkish Grand Prix will be F1's first visit to Istanbul Park since 2011. Race day in Turkey will mark 3,479 days since the last race at the circuit. That's the 15th longest gap between two World Championship F1 races at any track. The 2020 race will be the 8th F1 race held at Istanbul Park. Motorsport Park, Long Beach and Circuit of the Americas have also hosted exactly 8 races. Kimi Raikkonen, Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel are the only previous winners of the Turkish Grand Prix on the 2020 grid, as well as the only current drivers who have previously stood on the podium at the event. Vettel and Raikkonen are the only drivers on the grid to have previously taken pole here, which means that pole for Hamilton would see him start from the front at a 30th different circuit. Meanwhile, this weekend's race will be the first Turkish Grand Prix in which Felipe Massa, Fernando Alonso, Jarno Trulli, Jenson Button, Mark Webber and Rubens Barrichello have not appeared on the grid. If either Mercedes driver wins the Turkish Grand Prix, or a driver of any other Mercedes-powered car wins, this will be the 200th Grand Prix to be won by a Mercedes-powered car. Mercedes would be only the second engine manufacturer to reach the milestone after Ferrari, who recorded their 200th win at the 2007 Chinese Grand Prix. And, of course, a win for Lewis Hamilton will see him secure a record-equalling 7th World Championship. Alex Albon has not scored at any of the last three races. Should he fail to score again at the Turkish Grand Prix, this will be the first time that a Red Bull driver has not scored at four successive races since Mark Webber in 2009. Red Bull become the 11th team to reach 300 Grand Prix starts this weekend. However, it will be their 301st appearance. They appeared at the 2005 United States Grand Prix, but neither car started the race. And finally, if he fails to score at the Turkish Grand Prix, George Russell will equal Max Chilton for third in the list of most Grand Prix starts without scoring a point. This weekend will mark Russell's 35th race start. Only Luca Badoa and Charles Pic entered more races without ever scoring a point. Meanwhile, there are only two drivers who entered more races than Russell before finally scoring for the first time. Nicola Larini and Jonathan Palmer scored the first points of their careers on their 44th and 42nd starts, respectively.
Thank you, Nicky. As Rick mentioned, you can follow him across the race weekend. Some brilliant stuff, stats and facts and all sorts of good stuff on his blogs and on his Twitter page, at Lights Out, is where you can find him on Twitter. So the Turkish Grand Prix this weekend, last race was 2011. The lap record is Juan Pablo Montoya back in 2005. So that's how long ago that was. So we're going to get a new lap record without a doubt this weekend. It's an anti-clockwise circuit, so it's going to hurt the necks. So a lot of the drivers may struggle this weekend as well. But I'm very excited to see these new Formula One cars on this circuit after a 9-year gap. Hamilton is on the form of his life at the moment, so you can't discount him for a win. I think Bottas has got a lot to prove at the minute, because if he doesn't win some races, he's got no chance of winning this world title. I think Verstappen's going to do well this weekend as well. And I can see the Renaults and the McLarens doing all right this weekend. It's that sort of track where it could be anyone's game. I'm going to say Hamilton for the win, Verstappen second place. And I'm going to say Bottas has some sort of issue. So I'll go with Carlos Sainz at third.
Ooh. Now, actually, I think McLaren have better qualifying trim. They do race trim in the latter end of the season. They start the season quite strong in races, but they've dropped off a little bit to the likes of Renault. So I'll go Hamilton for the win, Verstappen second, just like you say, and Ricciardo for third place. Maybe even second step at the podium for Ricciardo. I think Renault are going to do well here. Red Bull, I don't think you can count them out. They've got a good car in terms of downforce. I just don't know whether they'll cope particularly well with the straight line speeds. And you're right about drivers getting sore necks and things in this race. That turn eight in a modern Formula One car, they reckon they're going to be pulling at least 5G through that, and they're going to have to do it 50-odd times during the race. That's a lot of pressure on drivers when they're used to going different way round the circuit. So I think that could be really interesting. And we haven't even talked about the weather. As far as I know, the weather is fine for this weekend, but you never know if that throws up something. We could have a really good Grand Prix. We're going to have one anyway, I think, because of the nature of the track, but it'll be really interesting to see what happens this weekend.
Yeah, we'll be back next week to review the race, tell you our thoughts on how we thought the Turkish Grand Prix went. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.